everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for being there, my friends, my new listeners, my old listeners who are not old but are young and lovely and curious and interested in what's going on with our crazy food system. And it's a good week here in New York. Lots of interesting summer-like temperatures, even though I think it's still spring. Whatever happened to spring? It's 90 degrees right now in New York, and I like it. But I do love spring, and I didn't really quite get enough of it just yet. So let's see what happens there. Will Karen get what she wants? We can't ever depend on weather here in New York. One thing that's guaranteed, it is consistently inconsistent. Okay, lots of things to talk about today. And the first thing I want to tell you is that I scheduled Rowena Jane to be on the program today. And thanks to Twitter and me sending out tweets and things to advertise the program, I discovered that Rowena, who is in Australia, got the times mixed up. It wasn't her fault, actually. And so she's not going to be on today. She's going to be on in June. And we will talk about her book, The Joy of Real Food, in June. And you know I love talking about real food. My nonprofit's called REAL, Responsible Eating and Living. The Joy of Real Food is a title that really resonates with me, and I look forward to talking with her next month. And I'm also excited. I love talking to people all around the world and love to hear about what's going on in other places like Australia. And just one thing I want to mention before I move on about her book is I learned that it's illegal to consume hemp in Australia. Did you know that? I mean, we have our own crazy laws here in the United States, and we haven't been able to grow hemp, but we can eat it. And I remember talking to another Australian not too long ago and learning about sugar, where all sugar in Australia is vegan. They don't filter it through charred animal bones like they do here in the United States. So every country, every town, every city, every family, we've all got our own kind of weird things that we do with food. And I'm going to bring up now a phrase from Marcel Proust, the French novelist, essayist, critic from the late 1800s, early 1900s. He eloquently expressed, "The real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes." Now, my partner Gary told me this quote just yesterday. It pertained to something we were talking about. And then in reading Rowena Jane's book, early on in the book, she quotes this as well. And I thought, okay, the universe is telling me to pay more attention to this. And I'm going to read it again. "The real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes." And today during this program, that's what I'm going to try and do, kind of demonstrate how important it is to have new eyes, or at least look at things differently than, or maybe dig deep and not take things for face value as they appear or as some folks want you to take them, because there's always underlying interesting things, not always good, that is not seen in the first look. So we have to have new eyes, and we have to look up and down and in and out between the lines. You'll know what I'm talking about in just a minute. But first, since there are no guests today, there's just me and you, I want to invite you, if you're listening live right now, I know a lot of you listen not live to the archive, but if you are listening live, you can call in. The number is 1-888-874-4888. You got that? 1-888-874-4888. And if you are listening live, just call and say hi. Let me know how you're doing. It would be great to hear from you and connect, and we can have some fun. I haven't done that in a long time, and now I'm doing it. The first thing I want to talk about is a subject that's near and dear to my heart, maybe yours, and that is Girl Scout cookies. Now, I used to love Girl Scout cookies. I was a Girl Scout, a brownie, and then a junior, and I loved going to Girl Scout camp. I was really into wearing the uniforms. I don't know why, but I was. And there was a small Girl Scout product. How can I call it? It was a store within a store selling all the Girl Scout goodies, the shirts, the shorts, the hats, the handbags, all the little paraphernalia, and I wanted all of it back then. And, of course, there were the cookies. And who didn't love Girl Scout cookies? Everyone loved Girl Scout cookies. And the story behind it is having the girls have an opportunity to raise money for their, what do you call them, their chapters, their, the word escapes me right now, their tribe. Anyway, for their group. And also they learn about selling something, and it's a good it's a good opportunity to have a real life experience with math and adding. So it's kind of a fun thing to do. But I want to tell you right now, here is a great lesson for all of us. Ready? I want you to go when you have a chance, or you could just do it with me now because I'm going to highlight a few of them, at the GirlScouts.org page, and if you click on the Frequently Asked Questions, this is a lovely class in everything wrong with our food system. And I kind of wanted to go over some of them. So there's this page on the Girl Scout cookies. Oh, and you know, the reason why I'm bringing this up is because it's Girl Scout cookie period. This is, I just got a couple of boxes, and I'll get into that in a little bit, but I haven't bought Girl Scout cookies in a really long time, and my niece is a Girl Scout, and I want to support everything that she does, but the cookies haven't been vegan. Well, now they have a vegan Thin Mint cookie, so we bought a couple of boxes, and that kind of brought me back to looking into what the Girl Scout cookies are all about. So the first thing I want to mention about this Frequently Asked Questions page, it is very clear to me, reading all of these questions, that the people who run the Girl Scouts know what's going on. They know what people's issues are. They know what people's concerns are with food. They are aware. They cannot use the head in the sand or I didn't know about it card, because it's all here, all the questions, all the right questions are here on the Frequently Asked Question page. The thing that I want to bring up is that the answers aren't right. The answers are not the correct answers or the good answers, in my humble opinion. And this is where we need to be looking and reading with new eyes and not taking all of this information for face value. So let's go over some of the questions, shall we? Okay, favorite question number one from the Girl Scouts Frequently Asked Question page. Do Girl Scout cookies have trans fats? Now, here's their answer, and then we'll go into it a little further. Girl Scouts of the USA is proud that all Girl Scout cookies have, quote, zero trans fats per serving, with the same great taste that has made them one of America's favorite treats over the years. All varieties contain less than, now pay attention here, all varieties contain less than 0.5 grams trans fat per serving, which meets the FDA guidelines for the, quote, zero trans fat designation. Selected varieties can claim 100% trans fat-free status, meaning there's not a speck of trans fat in the whole package. Now, did you understand that? It's kind of, I mean, if you're not really paying attention, you might think, okay, this is great, but it's not great. There are some varieties of Girl Scout cookies that have no trans fats, absolutely no trans fats, but there are some that fall under this less than 0.5 grams trans fat per serving. And you can tell because on the Thin Mints box that I got, I read the ingredients, and we're going to go over some of these ingredients because it's fun to do. They've got partially hydrogenated palm kernel and or cottonseed oil, soybean, and palm oil. We love partially hydrogenated oils, don't we, fans? And we know what's in partially hydrogenated oil, trans fat. But when you say that the serving size is 4 cookies, and 4 cookies has less than 0.5 gram of trans fat, then you can say it has 0 trans fat. Now, I don't know about you when you took math, but 0.5 grams doesn't equal 0. And if I have more than 4 cookies, which is easy to do, then all of a sudden you get more than 0.5 gram of trans fat, and you're now above the FDA guidelines. And whoever said that the FDA guidelines were safe, but at least they have guidelines. So what concerns me is that they're using hydrogenated oils, period. And people know that they don't want hydrogenated oils in their food, but apparently it doesn't seem to matter for the Girl Scout cookies. Now, I just want to continue while we're on the subject of the Thin Mints, which I've always loved. Crisp Wafers. Crisp Wafers covered in chocolatey coating made with natural oil of peppermint. It really is a lovely, lovely concept. Okay, so let's pick out some of my other favorite ingredients in here. While we're still on the subject of oil, if we talk about soybean oil and we don't say that it's not genetically modified, well, then it is. And we'll get to genetically modified question in a moment. They also have cornstarch in this particular cookie, and if it doesn't say it's not, it is genetically modified cornstarch. And what else? And soy lecithin is likely genetically modified. So they have some delightfully genetically modified ingredients along with hydrogenated oil. Don't you want some? Okay, now the next question here in order, is high fructose corn syrup used in Girl Scout cookies? Okay, they know that people don't want high fructose corn syrup. It's right here in the frequently asked questions, and their answer. And the answer is, ding! Our licensed bakers use a variety of ingredients in the production of Girl Scout cookies, including in some cookies, high fructose corn syrup. I guess the answer is yes. Currently, Little Brown Bakers, that's one of their bakers, does not use high fructose corn syrup in any of its cookie varieties. We trust our bakers, who are industry leaders, to develop recipes using ingredients that will produce the best tasting and highest quality cookies while simultaneously addressing industry trends, scientific trends, and, of course, consumer preference. So, one of their bakers doesn't use high fructose corn syrup, but the other baker that they use does. So you can find high fructose corn syrup in some of your Girl Scout cookies. And they're saying that they use ingredients that will produce the best tasting and highest quality cookies. Well, I'm going to argue with that one because I don't think these are the best tasting or the highest quality. Okay, let's continue. Of course, they talk about that they use palm oil. Why is palm oil used in Girl Scout cookies? Now, I'm not as uptight about palm oil. I know there's a lot of issues behind palm oil and how we're devastating the rainforests so that we can grow palms. There is a movement, the Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil. They're working to make more sustainable palm, and I know there's some question on how efficient and how effective they really are. It is a serious problem. It's not that on the top of my list of serious problems, but it is something very serious. And the thing is, I think palm oil is used in so many other ingredients that we can be getting it out of that I don't like to focus on, like vegan food, for example, as an evil palm oil culprit. We can talk about palm oil some other time, but there is palm oil in Girl Scout cookies. Yes. And then they have the green palm logo on the side of Girl Scout cookie packaging. Is that greenwashing? The green palm logo on Girl Scout cookie package signifies a commitment by Girl Scouts and our licensed bakers to develop a worldwide supply of sustainable palm oil.
And unfortunately, it's not currently possible to assure a fully sustainable supply in the quantities required by our bakers. Okay, so that's it with palm oil. But it gets better. Are there GMOs in Girl Scout cookies? That's what we were waiting for. Girl Scouts of the USA listens to our customers, and we work with our trusted bakers, who are industry leaders, to develop recipes using ingredients that will produce the best tasting and highest quality, there we go again, the best tasting and highest quality cookies while simultaneously addressing industry trends, scientific trends, and of course, consumer preference. We heard this line before. I continue. As an organization, we continue to defer the required federal guidelines as they relate to our products. Okay, this is where all the doublespeak goes. At the current time, there are genetically modified agricultural crops, GMOs, in Girl Scout cookies. Yay! Our bakers determine whether to use GMOs in Girl Scout cookies based on a range of market-related factors. Now you have to read cost in there. And depending on the specific cookie recipe. Girl Scouts recognize that many people have concerns regarding GMO ingredients, and we monitor member and consumer opinion on this matter. It is important to note that there is a worldwide scientific support for the safety of currently commercialized ingredients derived from genetically modified agricultural crops. Do you agree with that line, a worldwide scientific support for the safety of currently commercialized ingredients? It's a lot to swallow, but I don't think there is a worldwide, I don't think there's worldwide scientific support. There's a lot of us screaming that we don't want GMOs in our food. All right. There we go on GMOs. So there are GMOs, and you can find them in the soybean oil, the cornstarch, and the good news is that there are a couple of gluten-free Girl Scout cookies this year. So to some extent, they are listening. Like I said, they do know what people's concerns are. They know. But for some reason, they cannot go all the way, or they can't do the best possible. And so there are a couple of gluten-free Girl Scout cookies, and one of them, now they're not vegan, but they are gluten-free. One of them is called Toffee-tastic. And I wanted to point out a couple of things in them. They have butter. That's what makes them not vegan. They're a rice flour-based cookie. And they have corn syrup, which is likely GMO, soy lecithin, which is likely GMO, and xanthan gum, which can be made free of GMOs, but unless it's organic and unless the company that manufactures the xanthan gum certifies that it isn't, then it is from GMO ingredients. Isn't that nice? Okay. So there we have the GMO issue on the gluten-free cookie. And so there's so many questions here, and I haven't even read half of them. I've only read the ones that pertain to ingredients. But when I read the answer, it doesn't really give me a very warm, fuzzy, safe, trust, goodwill kind of feeling. And that's what I was talking about before, looking at things but having new eyes. And this is such a missed opportunity. But maybe we could turn it around to a positive opportunity. So if any of you have girls, daughters, granddaughters, nieces, nephews, etc., friends, that do love to sell Girl Scout cookies, maybe there's an opportunity for the girls to turn this around. I know there were some girls out there petitioning for different kinds of cookies. It might have been gluten-free. I don't remember at the time right now what it was they were petitioning for. But just like anything else, we don't have change unless individuals make change. And I would love to see a movement, a young girl movement, saying we want cookies that only have wholesome ingredients. And when we talk about high quality and best tasting, I mean real food, food that is not genetically modified, food that isn't manufactured to a point where you get high fructose corn syrup or you get partially hydrogenated vegetable oil and so on. And of course, wouldn't it be nice if it was organic? And what kind of lessons are people getting here? I think there's a lot of great lessons that could be had by learning about Girl Scout cookies and somehow petitioning for change. Now, what's the good news? The good news is several years back, when I started to look at Girl Scout cookies again, I made my own copycat Girl Scout cookie recipes. Now, there are lots of copycat Girl Scout cookie recipes out there, and I highly recommend looking at them because, now this is my personal, you know me, I believe we should all find our kitchen and as much as possible make our food. And when it comes to treats, and this is a treat, this is not an everyday food, this is a treat, I think it's best if we make them at home because then we're kind of less likely to eat more of them. And then we recognize that it's a treat because we've put energy, we've put time and love and whatever and quality ingredients into it, and then you could make them the way you like. And I have, let's see, if you go to responsibleeatingandliving.com, responsibleeatingandliving.com, and scroll down, you click on the recipe tab, and then the menu comes up and you get the index. When that page comes up, you can go to, scroll down to the cookies. Where are the cookies? Oh, they're under desserts. Under desserts. Cookies, and then you see under cookies, you see Girl Scout copycat cookies. All my recipes are gluten-free, and I've made the mint, the thin mint kind of cookie. I love them. These are so good. And we have a chocolate-covered peanut butter cream cookie, which is like the tag-alongs. They are amazing. You can make a basic shortbread cookie and use it in all the recipes or just cut out some fun little shapes. And then, you know, the Samoa, which are also called Coconut Delights. Those are cookies with chocolate and coconut on them. I have a recipe for that. And my favorite, the Do-si-dos, the peanut butter sandwich Girl Scout cookie. I have a recipe for that. Now, one of the things that I'm working on with my recipes, because we're always learning new things and nothing's ever perfect, right? So all of these Girl Scout cookies in my recipes are rice flour based. And I'm currently revisiting a lot of my recipes at responsibleeatingandliving.com in light of the knowledge that there's a considerable amount of arsenic in rice foods. And the rice flour foods don't score very well. They're kind of high in arsenic. Now, I love rice, and I still eat rice. And I choose those that have been tested that seem to have a lower amount of arsenic, like California-grown basmati rice, white or brown. They scored reasonably low for arsenic. So I eat that, and we don't eat rice as much as we used to. But I do have a lot of rice flour-based recipes, and I'm going back one by one and giving substitutions. So if the recipe originally called for rice flour, I leave that there as an option, but I also include a second flour mix, which is typically like an all-purpose gluten-free flour that Bob's Red Mill offers that is a mix of garbanzo beans, fava beans, sorghum flour, and some starches. And it's a really easy-to-use flour. So, you know, like I said, nothing's ever perfect, and the more we learn, the more we discover some of the not-so-nice things that are in our foods. Anyway, I love Girl Scout cookies, and I've got my box of Thin Mints, and I'm not happy about what's in them, but I'm still going to enjoy them. My number one rule for food is that it has to be vegan. That's, for me, the number one rule, because I don't believe in killing animals. I don't believe in causing pain and suffering. And that's the bottom line for me. But occasionally, if some not-so-healthy things get in my body, I hope that my body kind of just lets them pass through visits and doesn't stay very long. So I'm trying them, and I've got them. There we go. So that's the story on Girl Scout cookies. Do you have any comments? Did you buy Girl Scout cookies this year? Let me know. What did you think of them? Does it matter to you that they're not not free of GMOs, or that they have high fructose corn syrup or hydrogenated oils in them? And you have to remember that any product that says it's free of trans fats, you need to read the fine print, because if it says hydrogenated oil, it's not free of trans fats. It just has less than 0.5 grams per serving, and that serving size may not even be an actual serving size for you. It might be much smaller, and that's the trick. Whew, my goodness. So I'm looking at something quick. Speaking of GMOs, before we take a little break, there's all kinds of things going on around the country, around the world, about legislation, and the thing that we're trying to get, the very least, if we cannot get rid of GMOs right now, at least we want to know where they are in our food supply, and that requires labeling. And so a variety of states so far have tried pretty unsuccessfully to get labeling required on their food, and the companies that manufacture genetically modified food pour in a lot of money to make sure the requirement for labeling doesn't get passed. And they make up all kinds of reasons. They tell the consumer it's going to cost us so much more for them to change their labels. It's going to be so difficult and so burdensome. But they're making it all up. And the news is, you may have heard in Vermont, that they actually passed the first in the nation law requiring the label of genetically modified food. And that's supposed to take effect next year in July of 2016. Well, the Grocery Manufacturers Association and other industry groups are now asking for a federal appeals court to overturn a judge's refusal to block this law, and they recently filed in Burlington, Vermont, and we'll see what happens, because the state finalized the GMO labeling rules last month, and of course the excuse is that the law imposes burdensome speech requirements on food manufacturers. Now, it's interesting to me because this happened in Burlington, Vermont, and Burlington, Vermont, I used to go up there on a monthly basis about 10 years ago or more when I worked as a consulting engineer, and I used to visit IBM a lot up there, and I loved visiting Burlington because it was a great place to find delicious food, vegan food. I met a vegan chef up there, and back then when I didn't really know very many, and he was actually working in the hotel that I stayed at, and I was able to get these phenomenal meals. So I have warm feelings about Burlington, Vermont, and I really hope that this first-in-the-nation law requiring the labeling of genetically modified food does not get turned around. All right, let's take a quick break, and when we're back, we'll talk more about food. How about that? Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and we're back. It's the second part of the show today, and I just want to remind you, if there there is anybody out there who would like to say hello, 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 you can call in at 1-888-874-4888. 1-888-874-4888. It would be really nice to hear from you. And if not, you can continue like you do, sending me emails at info@realmeals.org, info@realmeals.org. Very good. All right. Let's move on to all the things I want to talk about. So I missed last week because I was summoned to jury duty. And one day, perhaps, I will serve on a jury, but it hasn't happened yet. I would like to do it. I think it's a fascinating thing. I've watched enough television shows and movies with trials and juries, and it's something I would like to participate in. The few times I was actually summoned and interviewed by lawyers, they never wanted me to participate on the jury. Somehow, I think they knew I was pretty opinionated. And this time I wasn't even interviewed, so I went in and sat for a long time, and I did get selected to be interviewed, but they never called on me. And what I was surprised to find out is how many juries are required for car accidents, and that's what most people were being interviewed for, and it just seemed rather sad that there are people suing. I mean, maybe there are times when it's not obvious who is wrong or who was wronged. But from some of the ones I've heard, it just sounds like people are trying to take advantage of the system and our time. And our time is precious. And the jury system, at least in my neighborhood in Queens, New York, seems very inefficient. But, you know, I always try and make the best out of things, and I had my computer with me, and I was able to do a bit of work, and it was calm and quiet. Another thing that I like is the opportunity to just casually talk to strangers. Now, I rarely initiate conversations about food, and I'm smiling as I say this, but if I start talking to people, I can't help myself. But I always try and do it in a non-judgmental, loving way, and I did have an opportunity to talk to a number of people and plant some seeds about whole foods, plant foods, and what's going on with animal foods and all the other things that aren't so right in our food system. So that's what I got out of going to jury duty, talking to a few strangers, and proselytizing. Now, perhaps you participated in the Food Revolution Summit a few weeks ago. My friends John Robbins and his son Ocean Robbins have created the Food Revolution Network, which is at foodrevolution.org. And a couple of weeks ago, they had their Food Revolution Summit. It was 8 days long, about 3 hours a day, and I was really fortunate. I participated in providing a healthy recipe and tip each day, and I got to listen to all the interviews and respond to some of the comments, and there were thousands and thousands of comments. It was a very inspiring event, and I was really fortunate to be a part of it. One of the things that I wanted to bring up, because in deciding what I wanted to talk about today, in terms of looking with our eyes in a new way, I thought about perhaps you've heard in the news how the food babe, Vanie Hari, and Dr. Oz have been called on for their, quote, quackery and misinformation. And I learned during the Food Revolution Summit from John Robbins that there's much more behind what's going on against Dr. Oz and against Vanie Hari, the food babe, than meets the eye. And I just wanted to cover that briefly because It's the theme of today's show, seeing things from another perspective with new eyes. Now, I had the good fortune of being on the Dr. Oz show back in, it was a long time ago now, 2007, I think. And I was a little frustrated on the program because I was talking about green juice and healthy diets and what saved me when I was going through cancer. And then he and Dr. David Katz started talking about all the healthy cancer foods, anti-cancer foods, and they were talking about salmon and other animal foods that I really didn't agree with. So I have to say that I don't agree with everything that Dr. Oz says. And there are some things that are seemingly ridiculous, and some are really, really very good. But what he's trying to do is just put all kinds of things out there and show people how to think for themselves, I think. And it's entertainment, and I don't think he's really doing anything terrible, certainly not compared to what corporations can do in terms of their marketing and advertising. And when I first heard about the Food Babe, I was kind of suspect too, and some of the things that I read about her. But learning from the Food Revolution Summit, what I discovered is most of the negative things we're hearing about Vani Hari and Dr. Oz are coming from the corporate world, because these two advocates are against genetically modified food. They support genetic modified food labeling, and the corporations don't like that. The corporations don't like the power that Vani Hari has had in getting artificial ingredients out of some of our foods and making companies make change. They don't like that. And so what they're trying to do is make these people look like quacks, not credible, so that they disappear and go away. But I don't think that's going to happen, because there are too many of us who know the truth. And then when I was just kind of looking at what's been said on Dr. Oz and Vani Hari, I came across a recent article from a couple of weeks ago by Rick Berman in the Washington Times, and his article is called Exposure of Food Babe, Dr. Oz. And he talks just about what I was discussing, and he underlined that Kraft Foods had announced it was changing the formulation of its famous macaroni and cheese, and they're removing food coloring because it was one of the latest targets from the Food Babe, Vani Hari. And I laughed because this enforced what I learned from the Food Revolution Summit from John Robbins, because I know who Rick Berman is. Do you? Okay, Rick Berman is a scary kind of guy. Rick Berman is a longtime Washington, D.C. public relations specialist whose lobbying and consulting firm, Berman & Company, Inc., advocates for special interests and powerful industries. He wages deceptive campaigns against industry foes, including labor unions, public health advocates, and consumer safety, animal welfare, and environmental groups. And he's linked to all kinds of nonprofits that have really lovely sounding names, but when you dig deep and look at them with new eyes, you discover it's all misinformation trying to get you not to support the really important information uncovering what's going on with our food system. And how do I know this? Well, he has a couple of websites. The Center for Consumer Freedom, which I stopped looking at a long time ago. It is so super scary. It's a front group for the food and beverage industries that attacks any government regulations or activist campaigns that would affect their profits. And they spin all kinds of articles to tell you why the attacks on certain regulations are not good, and why everything the food and beverage industries are doing are wonderful, and it's all about consumer choice, consumer freedom. That's why they're called the Center for Consumer Freedom. Well, they have a sister site called activistcash.com, and I haven't looked at that site in a long time, but I remember looking at it about 10 years ago, and I just looked at it today, and there's a lot of old false information, including information on meat, for example. And they have organizations like the one I used to work for, which was founded by John Robbins, Earth Save International, and they list all these different people that are involved with the organization. They list that I'm secretary, and I haven't been secretary on the board of that organization for a very long time. I was executive director for much longer, and they just list all kinds of false information, old information. And so this is a guy who is one of many who are supporting corporate concerns and trying to quiet and silence people like the food babe, Vani Hari, and Dr. Oz. That's nice, isn't it? Yeah, so I learned a lot from the Food Revolution Summit. Now, I want to tell you a little bit more about foodrevolution.org before I move on to a few other subjects. And that is that the latest project that the foodrevolution.org organization is doing is tonight there will be a free one-hour program. It's at 8:30 Eastern Time, 5:30 Pacific Time. You can go to foodrevolution.org and register for it. It's a power hour, and we're going to be talking about lots of different things related to food and address concerns about health and food preparation, and I'm going to be involved probably around at the end of the program. I will be available with John and Ocean for answering questions. And the exciting thing is in a few weeks we're going to be launching the second of a six-week online program, and I hope you will check it out because the last one we did in October was wonderful, and I expect that this one that's coming up the end of May to June is going to be even better. There's nothing like learning about healthy food from John Robbins. He adds so much. I always think he channels the universe, and he really packages things in such a lovely and love-filled way. And it's a class to help people learn how to eat healthy at home and on the go. And in addition to this program that we'll be offering towards the end of May, I will, as part of some of the program, you can also get me to work with you as a personal coach for 3 sessions. And this is all through this foodrevolution.org program. So if you would like to do that, and I hope you will, I'm really looking forward to it, please go to foodrevolution.org and sign up for the Power Hour, and then you'll find out about everything else. How's that sound? I think it sounds pretty good. Okay, a few more things in the news, and then I'll talk about some happier, delicious things. How's that? So, you know, there's this trade agreement that the United States government is working on. And I remember campaigning against all the other trade agreements that got passed. And there was NAFTA and CAFTA, and now we have TPP, the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement. And there was an interesting article in NPR that was talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The fact that they're not talking about the impact of the law on health. Okay, this is all about trade, and it's all about trade for food, but there's no consideration about the impact on people's health. And, you know, here's another example of when I say look at things with having new eyes. This is another classic example of see no evil, have no evil, closing your ears, closing your eyes, closing your mouth, not looking at obvious issues. And, you know, some of the things that we've discovered from these trade agreements that we've established, the North American Trade Agreement, the impacts on Mexico and Canada and the United States, and then CAFTA, Central America, all these trade agreements we've created, in my opinion, have not been beneficial, and they've not been beneficial to the small family farmers, and they have not been beneficial for our health, because what they're doing is making those processed foods, highly processed foods, less expensive, and people end up eating them, and then they get sick. This is not a good thing. And NPR had an article, no one's talking about what the Pacific trade deal means for diets, and this is a conversation we need to be having. Apparently, according to Colin Schwartz, press secretary of the USDA, it says, U.S. officials say they have no plans to explore the health impacts of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We do not see conclusive evidence that trade agreements themselves have a major impact on diet and health one way or the other. And they don't see it because they're not looking, and they need to have new eyes. What can we do? What can we do? Well, what I mean, there are some things we can do, but we have to know that we need to make noise, and we need to be aware, and we need to be screaming at our representatives, and to the best of our ability, buying products that don't support the legislation that we don't agree in, buying locally grown as much as possible and organic. And that's really the best that we can do. We do benefit because, we here in the United States, for example, we get more avocados and watermelons and all kinds of products from Mexico that are now in more abundance than they used to be. And I love avocados, but if I could connect the dots and I knew that different countries' populations were suffering health-wise because of a certain agreement that was advantageous to me to have more variety in my life, I wouldn't want to support that. I would rather wait for avocados to become in season in California and Florida rather than shift the balance in such a way that I got avocados from Mexico and Mexico ended up getting meat and feed corn for their livestock, and so that they could eat more meat and ultimately eat more processed food. That's not a good thing. Not a good thing at all. Now, speaking of which, there was another lovely little article that came out recently, and I always laugh when I see these things because I read them and I go, oh, duh, really? But apparently we have to do a lot of research on things that we already know the answer to in order to make significant change. So there was an article published last week, April 28th, in Nature Communications. The title is Fat, Fiber, and Cancer Risk in African Americans and Rural Africans. And I'll read some of the abstract. Rates of colon cancer are much higher in African Americans, 65 out of 100,000, than in rural Africans, less than 5 in 100,000. The higher rates are associated with higher animal protein and fat and lower fiber consumption, higher colonic secondary bile acids, lower colonic short-chain fatty acid quantities, and higher mucosal proliferative biomarkers of cancer risk in otherwise healthy middle-aged volunteers. And what they did was they did a two-week food exchange. This was not a brilliant study, but basically they took African Americans and they fed them a high-fiber, low-fat African-style diet, and they took rural Africans and fed them a high-fat, low-fiber Western diet, and what do you think happened? The food changes resulted in remarkable reciprocal changes in the mucosal biomarkers of cancer risk and in aspects of microbiota and metabolome known to affect cancer risk. And this was just in 2 weeks. And what's amazing is in just 2 weeks, you can either clean up a lot of your body or you could poison it. Either way, the body is so forgiving. So anyone who has not been eating healthfully for a long time, as soon as you get the information, you can make a change for the better and clean up your health and live a more energetic, quality life for longer. And that's fun. So I'm not surprised with this findings, but always love to read stuff like that. Now, what about those animals? What about those animals? There's something new in New York. There are bills. We've got some introduced legislation in New York, S-59 and A-384, to put an end to extreme confinement in New York for pigs in gestation crates and extreme confinement of veal calves. This is good news, isn't it? The bill, S-59A-2015, reads, pertains to confinement of certain animals for food-producing purposes, prohibits any person to tether or confine any pig during pregnancy or calf raised for veal for all or the majority of any day in a manner that prevents such animal from lying down, standing up, and fully extending its limbs and turning around freely, establishes that commission of such crime shall constitute a Class A misdemeanor punishable by imprisonment for a period not to exceed 1 year and or fine not to exceed $1,000. The punishment, in my opinion, is not big enough, but it's a start, and just reading these words is getting me kind of emotional. And the fact that we allow these horrors to continue is incredible. And the sooner we can get better laws on the books, the better. So if you're New Yorkers, let your representatives know you support Bill S-59A and the corollary in the House, in the Assembly, excuse me, which is A-384. Pretty good. All right. I don't have a lot of time. Okay, so quickly, I'm going to talk fast now. this past week, I discovered a restaurant in my neighborhood called Bear Burger. It's been here quite a while. It's a chain in the New York metro area. I think it goes out to Ohio, New Jersey, some other places. I always stayed away from it. It never looked very friendly. Occasionally, I looked at the menu, and I saw elk burgers, duck burgers, bison burgers. I wasn't happy about it. But I dug a little deeper when I heard a meetup group was having a vegan event at a Bear Burger restaurant because they have three vegan burgers. And all of a sudden, I looked at Bear Burger with new eyes. And I discovered some pretty wonderful things about them. They're all organic. They don't serve GMOs. And the animals that they do serve are not from factory farms. And they have three vegan burgers and some vegan sides, and I think this is really a positive move for the future. So you might want to check out Bear Burger. Gosh, we've pretty much come to the end of the program. I want to direct you to responsibleeatingandliving.com. You might want to get updated on my blog, What Vegans Eat. There's always some fun stuff there. And if you look under... under my recipe category, there's a thing called product review, and I get samples of different foods from time to time, and I had the opportunity to sample a Chef Ernesto all-natural, high-quality frozen food line. I had some good points and some not-so-good points to say, and you might check that out, but these are very inexpensive vegetarian frozen foods. They're not organic. They probably have some GMO ingredients in them, but three of them are vegan, and they're very, very inexpensive, and I kind of thought they might be fun for party food. So you can check out that review at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Hey, looks like we've come to another end of It's All About Food, and I'm so glad you joined me, and I want to hear from you at info@realmeals.org. Send me an email, send me a note, tell me how you are and what you're thinking. Okay. In the meanwhile, have a delicious week.